Welcome to a new episode of the Bleeding Metal Podcast. I am your host, Kiki. My pronouns are she, her. And today I am here alone with a very special guest. Would you please introduce yourself?
Hey, hi. Yes, I'm Alex Lennonberg. Some of you might know me as the drummer of Camelot or of Syra, my band from Sweden. I've also played with Luca Turi's Rhapsody and a ton of other bands. And currently, I'm actually mostly active the last couple months at least, as the co-founder of a new streaming service that is dedicated to the rock and metal community called Rock.
We were just starting to get to know each other before we pressed record. You were saying you just became a father, and I was congratulating you.
Thank you.
Do you want to talk a little bit about that experience as well?
Oh, sure, of course. It was the most wonderful experience. But first of all, we have twin boys. So that was something. They're 5 months now, a little over 5 months. And, you know, twins tend to come early.
Oh, wow.
That's kind of regular. And the boys were actually almost 2 months early, but they were absolutely fine, fortunately. And they've been a joy ever since. And for the most part, they were pretty much synchronized, which was great. But just the past 2 weeks or so, they're not in sync at all. So as soon as one is finally sleeping, the other usually wakes up, starts crying, wants to get his milk or whatever he wants. And it's like, it's something. But it's absolutely beautiful. It's also the most beautiful thing I've ever experienced, for sure.
That's really lovely to hear. And it's really good to get to know you as a human as well. Since a lot of us know you from your many, many years in the metal scene, in the metal industry. Do you want to summarize your career maybe a little bit?
Yeah. You know, first of all, I was like a typical metal kid. That's how everything started for me. And we're talking early on. My brother is 8 years older than I am. And I got in touch with it in the late 80s, I would say, for the first time. And back then, as a child, you don't categorize music. You're just, I like this, you know. And I remember this. It was like mostly Van Halen and a lot of that stuff. Sammy Hagar, Van Halen at the time, actually. But also Halloween, Metallica. And that's how it all started. And it just went from there. And so I was the typical metal kid. Then started playing drums, always had an interest in instruments, and then especially in playing drums. And one thing led to another, and of course we were having our bands as teenagers, and actually most of my friends from back then were still working together, and they're still, you know, they actually also became professional musicians, which is quite something. Like we had our band, we were like 12, 13, and everybody actually went on to be a professional musician.
Wow.
But yeah, for some reason, we're talking early 2000s, and all these bands, like my own band and every project we did, for some reason, we never managed to get like a proper record deal or something like that. And then without really trying too hard, sort of my session career just started out of nowhere because people just started asking me to play for them more and more. Yeah. And in my mid-20s was when I started touring internationally for the first time, when I played with Annihilator from Canada.
Mm-hmm.
So I took with them, actually taken back at the time, taken over directly from Mike Mangini. He did the record and Mike was not available to tour. And through some contacts, I got in touch with Jeff Waters. And next thing I know, I'm on the plane to Canada and then I'm touring with them. So that was quite something, as you can imagine. And basically it went from there. So also, funnily enough, I'm German and my career in Germany didn't really take off until I started touring with a band from Canada. But it is what it is, you know?
Yeah.
And then just one thing led to another. Played with quite a famous German band called Axis for a while. I've been a member of Mekong Delta, progressive band, for a long time now, 17, 18 years. And then, of course, I started touring. I played with Stratovarius. Mm-hmm. I filled in with them, started playing with Timo Talki. Then for a long time, I played with Luca Turilli in Rhapsody, which was absolutely amazing. One of my absolutely favorite experiences ever as a musician and as a human. Playing with Luca and the band was just unbelievable. And then we formed Syra in the mid-2010s. That's been a thing for quite a while now, my own band that I'm a founding member of. And then I joined Camelot in 2017, 2018, around about then. And so that kept me really, really busy until the pandemic, of course. And this is kind of funny because it directly ties into how we came up with the idea for the app. Because I remember I was sitting early 2020, I was at the airport and I was really thinking, man, I could really need a break. Like just a couple months off would be great. And, you know, be careful what you wish for. Next thing we know, we have a global pandemic. So maybe it was me. So if you want to blame me for that, maybe that was me.
We have finally found the origin of the COVID-19 pandemic. It was Alex Lundenberg's wishful thinking. Yes,
it was my wishful thinking at some airport, exactly. Fortunately, that's, you know, behind us now, but everybody will remember it. It's not too long ago. And I remember at the time I was visiting my friend Peter Moog, my co-founder of the Rock app. I was visiting him in Sicily, Italy, where he stayed over the winter months. And we talked about what kind of stuff could we do? Like, is there something we could do for the music scene or to improve some aspect of being a musician? Because it's so hard. And when we noticed that now we couldn't even play shows anymore, it started to feel really urgent to do something. And I mean, not just for ourselves, but especially for up-and-coming musicians.
Yeah, before we go on with the rock story, we got a little bit carried away, but I'm really enjoying this conversation. We are here to talk about the Rock streaming app. And before we start with the origin story of it, up until here in your career and in your life as a musician, was music your full-time job? Were you already living from it? Or were you still having either a day job or also teaching music? What was your status at the moment?
Up until my mid-20s, up until I started touring, I was teaching a lot. Basically, I was always living off music. After school, I officially went to study. I went to the university just to calm the parents down a little bit.
Yeah.
But I never really, you know, put any effort into studying because I always knew I would just want to be a musician.
What was your career or your...
American English.
Oh,
Yeah, Amerikanistik in German. How we call it, I figured I would study something that I'm kind of good at so people wouldn't notice that I'm actually not studying. That was the plan behind it. I wasn't really, like I said, I didn't want, absolutely didn't want to become an English teacher. Absolutely not. That's what I did. And I was teaching at a local school, a pretty famous local school though, but still local. I did that for a couple of years, just hoping and waiting for my break, which then fortunately came.
That's incredible.
So that's all I ever did. And then from the moment I started touring, basically that's what I did. I was living off playing shows, occasionally then teaching still, but just, you know, not as much as before. And lots of recordings. I've always loved recording. I've done quite a bit of, also actually of kind of ghost recording for other people. And it's always been a great thing. Of course, I mean, nowadays, a lot of stuff is programmed and you don't need studio musicians as much as you needed them 30, 40 years ago. But I mean, that's the case with almost everything. So I still managed to record quite a bit.
Right. And so fast forward to the beginning of 2020, as we were saying, the pandemic breaks out and you have this amazing idea to change the metal industry.
Yes, exactly. What happened is, as I said, Peter and I were talking about, you know, various things, tossing around ideas and thinking of how can we improve booking for bands. We were just looking for something. But it turned out that the root of the problem is pretty much streaming and how it overtook, you know, traditional record sales and how important it is, but at the same time, how little it pays, especially per stream.
Yeah.
And the thing is that we're both, you know, of course, we're fans of Patreon, and we was like, oh, this is actually a great idea. So how can we maybe combine something, have like a sort of a Spotify for metal with, you know, that's much, you know, more fair and has better conditions, and kind of combine it with the Patreon idea. And that's how we came up with this idea that if we can just find a way of getting the bands on board, and then if they start spreading our idea and our links, then maybe we can get them some sort of a part of that. And that's how the whole direct artist support thing came up. So what it is, basically, we are paying 10% of the subscription to a band of your choice, basically the band that you went through to sign up for the Rock app. And that's for year one. Year two, it goes down to 5%. And you can then reallocate these 5% to another band if you wish so, or to a charity. because a lot of people asked us for that. And yeah. that's on the regular subscription, and on the more expensive Hi-Fi Pro subscription, it's going to be indefinitely. Past those 2 years, it's always going to stay at 10%. And you will, again, be able to reallocate that starting year two. I went a little bit into details already, but yeah, that was the idea, to find a way of participating the bands directly, you know, with the money from the subscription, and have them get some sort of monthly income already there. And then, of course, the other bit was, how can we improve the royalties? How can we make sure people are getting more than the 0.3 cents per stream that you get, for example, now at Spotify?
Yeah. And by this time, it was just the two of you still brainstorming, or had you brought in any consultants from the legal side of things or from the financial side of things?
We quickly tried to reach out to our contacts, especially in the industry, to see if this is even viable at all. If it makes sense, if this can, you know, can be done. That was basically me reaching out to everybody I know at record companies and labels, you know?
Yeah.
Distributions or collecting societies. I have a really good friend that works at the Austrian Collecting Society. He was actually really helpful with a lot of information. And, you know, the people that we work with at the record companies, they were all very supportive of the idea. But it was still us playing the numbers game for a couple more weeks or months, because the truth is, the margin is extremely low in the whole business. Because if you think of it, a subscription, $10.99, there is not a lot of money in there. And then if you pay out 70 or 80% of that, the question is, how can you even turn a profit with the remaining 20 to 25, 30%? Because in the end, even if this is not about us getting rich with it, we need to turn a profit. Because if we don't turn a profit, then we cannot sustain the company. So it was really, really interesting to play that numbers game, and really, really exhausting too. It took us a while, and we figured out it can be done.
That's the good news.
Time will tell.
Absolutely.
Yeah, but it's, but I mean, yeah, it looks like it can be done. Yeah.
Yes. I went to read off the Rock website the definition, because by then you started to get the consolidated idea of what the platform should be. And as of today, it is: Rock is a music streaming service made specially for metal and rock fans. All of your favorite bands, every imaginable subgenre, tailored recommendations and perfect playlists. More money per stream for the bands and artists you listen to. That is explained further in the FAQ, it says. Direct artist support. Rock pays up to 10% per user per month to your favorite band. High quality audio and offline streaming. Listen to all other styles of music and artists as well. Our focus is rock and metal, but you can listen to anything you want. That creates a little confusion, I think, but we will get into all of the details, please. With an easy import function for your favorite playlists from other services. So you are very blatantly putting it out there. We want you to move. We want you to leave the other platforms and come listen with us.
Yeah, of course. That's the whole idea. You know, the truth is, we don't expect everybody to leave Spotify immediately or move over to us. And, you know, that's perfectly fine. We just want to make it as easy as possible for people to do it.
Yeah.
And that was one of the main things, one of the most difficult things about the whole platform, was this definition of what kind of music are we going to offer? Because the original idea was, we're going to draw a line somewhere. It's going to be rock and metal. And then quickly we noticed, well, there's two major problems. How do you define rock? It's kind of easy still to define metal.
Yeah.
But rock, what is, like, where is the line between rock music that has like a pop influence and pop music that's a bit rocky, has a little bit of guitars?
That's a very good point.
Turned out to be impossible. Like, there's no way you can actually draw that line for real. It's going to be different for different people. And we realized, especially nowadays, people are not as narrow-minded that they are only going to listen to rock and metal. They are probably going to listen to it 90% or 95%, or even if it's 99%, but not 100%. They occasionally want to listen to something else, which is perfectly fine.
And also, there are so many crossovers and so many collaborations that, you're right, it would just be impossible to exactly define who and what is allowed in the platform.
Oh, absolutely. It's absolutely impossible. And then if you think of the fact that then people would need a second subscription, like if they wanted to listen to something else. And that's where we were like, this is asking too much. That's not going to work for most people. We don't want that.
Yeah.
So what we're doing is, we're focused on the genres, on rock and metal, which means we are putting the effort there in terms of subgenres, in terms of artist biographies, how everything is linked together. The playlists are tailored to that, you know? Like, we don't have a 70s reggae playlist, but we have a 70s prog rock playlist. We have a 70s rock playlist, an 80s prog metal playlist, a 90s melodic death metal. We have, like, all these, everything, you know, very detailed with the rock and metal genres.
Yeah.
And so there is everything else, but you have to search for it. If you want to listen to something else, sure, just go ahead. You can listen to anything. But our focus is on the genre. And the reason why that is important is the whole idea of how we are going to pay better royalties, we don't attract a mainstream audience. Because the problem with the mainstream audience is that they, like most people, are listening to the same music, whatever is just the hit music at the moment.
Yeah.
Like the 10, 20, 30 favorite songs of everyone on the planet on the big playlists on Spotify and Apple Music and all that. And they are just more or less just putting them on repeat. And these songs get unbelievably high numbers. And to be able to pay for that, the platforms, because the money goes into the same pot, they need to cross-finance. So what happens is a rock or metal fan is listening to his music, but a lot of his money or her money will be, you know, cross-financed to these mainstream acts. And if you don't attract these people, well, they are not, you know, you don't have them. You don't have these streams. So on our platform, even if somebody is listening to something else, it doesn't really matter. It's not going to be quantitative. The majority of the streams will be in rock and metal. And what happens suddenly is there's no more cross-financing with other genres. And there's just a little bit of cross-financing from a regular band to Metallica. But the crazy thing is that it's just not at the same level. The level at which is happening now on Spotify or the other streaming services from metal to the mainstream is unbelievable. So even if we do have a little bit of pooling towards bigger acts in our scene, it still creates a much better payout on average. Okay. So that's the whole idea. So we are still using the same model, which is called the pro rata model, simply because we had to. We wanted to go user-centric.
Yeah.
So that might be a little bit too much into detail.
That was absolutely where my question was going. Let's please go in there.
Of course, that was the original idea, because user-centric is a super fair model. Because what it means is your money always just goes to the act that you are listening to. If 1 month you are just listening to one band, nothing else, it doesn't matter, are you listening to 10 songs, 100, 1,000, the part of your subscription that can be distributed will just go to that band, nobody else. That would be amazing for a lot of bands.
Yeah.
Especially for bands with super fans, meaning people that are almost only listening to a particular band.
Yeah.
Or only listening to a few bands, you know?
Right. But I also think that a lot of us go through phases. Just the past year, I have been at different times obsessed with maybe three bands, and I have listened to their discography for 3 weeks at a time. And yeah, I will still listen to other things. And I also like to listen to the new music that keeps coming out and the new releases. But I will have the latest was I Prevail. And I listened to I Prevail for days on end. But as you were saying, just from my user standpoint, I also have a party playlist. I come from Ecuador. I have my reggaeton from time to time. And all this stuff like that. Yeah, I absolutely agree that it is essential for me to have everything available, because I am from the problem generation that started this whole thing, that got very spoiled. And we just wanted all of the music at our fingertips immediately, all of the time, and not to really realize the cost of it. But I think also most of the people nowadays, that is the way they consume music. And or media in general, right? We have everything available all of the time. And most of the people don't even get informed about all of these payout models or even how the royalties are spread and are divided. So of the people who do know, there have been many different associations asking and pushing and lobbying for Spotify and other streaming platforms to move what you were saying, pro rata payout system, to the user-centric payment system. And there have been many platforms who have also announced that they were moving in that direction, but I don't think today that there is one that is already doing it. And so it is really interesting and important as well for me to hear that that was actually your intention, but the end you're not going for it.
No, but the reason is, nobody wanted to really do it. That's the problem. And I get that they don't want to change their system entirely, or at least it's going to take time. And that's the thing. I truly believe there will be a user-centric system, and we will be the first, as soon as we can, we will jump on it. The minute we can do it, we will do it. But until it exists. We need some better alternative. And the thing is that we kind of figured out the best possible way we can do this now. And this is the thing. It's still a compromise, but it will always be a compromise for the fact alone that it's only 10 or 11 euros a month. Because if you only have that much money, theoretically, that's all you can, you know, distribute. And in reality, of course, it's not all of that because there's still taxes, there's still other costs. Mm-hmm. So at the most, 70% of the money will be distributed. And if you think about that, this equals to around about 700 streams a month for which you could pay 1 cent. Mm-hmm. People should also not forget that if you, on average, listen to more than 700 songs, there simply is not more money than a cent because we cannot make money out of thin air. Yeah. That's all there is. So that's one of the problems already to begin with, right? And that's what I mean. Like, there's always compromises, but at least with our system, we can achieve the best possible outcome right now. Mm-hmm. And what's maybe even more important, we can show that people care and that there is a platform that cares, that it's not just all about maximizing profits for some people, but that this can be done in a different way. And my hope is also that this will be a signal for others to embrace these things more and maybe hopefully lead to a change somewhere down the road. Because, of course, I mean, from a business point of view, for us, it would probably be better if we were the only fair company. But as a musician also, I would love it if Spotify or all the others would suddenly jump on user-centric, even if that means that suddenly that's not our single point anymore. But we still are like a rock and metal platform. We still have other things to offer. Hopefully will make us attractive, but then at least the whole game would be much better. And I think, I really hope that's where we'll go over the next couple of years.
Awesome. So it's a start to changing the game. I really like that approach. Yes. And just to summarize how exactly Rock will be able to have higher payouts for rock and metal, if I understand correctly, we are gatekeeping the pop listeners.
Yes. Exactly.
We are only having metalheads on the app, which means the money that we are paying to Rock will be distributed among everything that we listen to, which means a few cents might still go to the Taylor Swift and Billie Eilish's of the world.
Of course.
Probably a big chunk of that will go to the Metallicas of the world, but all of those smaller and more niche, heavier artists will still get, or in relation to the competition, to other streaming platforms, will still get paid out more than usual because the money that you will get is probably coming... You as the Rock app is probably coming only from listeners from rock and metal.
Exactly. Because why would anybody else actually go on a platform, even if they can?
Yeah.
But it's not going to appeal to, you know, regular music listeners. And that's the whole idea. You summed it up perfectly. It's not perfect by any means, but it's probably the best compromise we can do at this very moment.
It's a very good alternative. And for this to work, of course, Rock needs a lot of people to sign on, or as many metalheads as Rock can get. But your crowdfunding campaign has already proven successful. As of today, it has been funded by 150% of the 10,000 euro that was the goal. And there are still 4 days left. That is already very good news. Congratulations.
Thank you. That was very positive and very important for us to kind of see the feedback from the actual community for the first time. And to be honest, this was mostly what this was about. The 10,000 euros, I mean, as nice as it is, and we need every bit of income we can have at the moment, this was not the actual goal, because in reality, we need much more money. And
of course,
we were fortunate enough to find people that, you know, were able and willing to invest in this idea. Especially also to these people, we needed to show and to ourselves that there is actual demand, that we, you know,
interest.
We are not just... Exactly, actually interest from the public. And so it was great to see this. And so the campaign will go another 4 days. It's going to stay what they call in demand after. So you can still actually get the perks even after it's officially over.
Okay.
But if we had not raised the goal, then it would have been over. So that's what happens with these in demand Indiegogos. And now we are just trying our best to get everything finished, which it's always the same thing. It always takes a bit longer than you would like to. So we were hoping to have everything ready by the end of the campaign, but it's going to take us a few more weeks to get everything ready for the app. We started communicating this with the backers, and we'll make, you know, another post about this, and probably I'm thinking of having also like live video on mm-hmm. YouTube and have people ask their questions and just, you know, we're trying to be as open as we can all the time. So what happened is,
that's great.
It sounds stupid, but to be honest, we kind of underestimated mostly the holiday break because mm-hmm. for 3 or 4 weeks, we were just not able to move forward with the content ingestion mm-hmm. because we're talking about easily 100 million songs wow. that we have to ingest into the app.
Right.
And we're small teams, so we have to take each label at a time. Mm-hmm. We don't have the manpower of the competition, and it just takes time. We underestimated that. And then everybody was on a holiday break, which, I mean, all, they also deserve.
Of course.
They're all,
yeah.
Everybody should have that, you know? Mm-hmm. So it's going to take a bit longer. And another reason why it takes a little bit longer is because we had a lot of requests, which we didn't expect, to be honest, from underground bands. Mm-hmm. I mean, we didn't expect them to request to upload directly because there's all these aggregators like DistroKid, mm-hmm. CD Baby, TuneCore, Artistify, all these companies. Mm-hmm. So we thought we would all be using that.
Yeah.
But it turns out a lot of bands, seriously, like 400 or 500 bands now, they really absolutely want to directly upload to us.
Wow.
This is crazy. We were not expecting that. We yeah. were also honestly not ready for that. So what we're doing right now is we're building an upload page for that. Mm-hmm. And what's more difficult is actually the legal work behind it because there's still legal work involved.
Right.
But then we will make sure we have the options. So the goal right now is to have these bands at launch already, which is also another reason why we're sort of looking at another 4 to 6 weeks until we have everything ready.
Okay.
To have them in the app already at start so that they yeah. don't have a disadvantage in comparison to the signed bands when it comes also to the direct artist support and all that.
Right.
You know, I was just moved personally, to mm-hmm. be honest, to see all this interest. This was just absolutely astonishing. So we want to pay our respect to that. But that means, again, because we're actually a rather small team. We're about 20 people tops or so mm-hmm. at the moment, like freelancers, people helping us. So everything takes time, but yeah. we're working on it.
That really warms my heart. I want to admire and appreciate that because as we have heard just in this talk with you, I have learned about your career and your life. It's just really nice to see that you don't take that for granted, how difficult it is to start as an artist, especially in the metal scene, and that you are giving the new and upcoming artists also a fair chance. That is really good absolutely. To hear. Before we go onwards to the user and artist experience, this show is going to air on January 30th. And mm-hmm. as of right now, your website still says that you'll be launching in January. Do you have an estimate of a new release date? And also for the other parts of the world, Latin America or North America, yeah. etc.?
So realistically, we're hoping to launch end of February, early March. So that it's only like about 4 weeks, at top 6 weeks later than okay. we originally announced. And it seems possible, to be honest. Mm-hmm. There's always this question, for example, if there's like one of the last big ones missing, we have contracts with everybody, but like, again, like we have to, you know, ingest all the material.
Yeah.
Can we still launch and will people be, you know, be willing to wait? Like if we tell them, hey, this, you know, this is going to be on the app in 4 weeks, but ideally we don't want to do this. Ideally, we want to really have as much as we can at the get-go so people can find everything they're looking for. Mm-hmm. That's what we're looking at. I think early March is super realistic, but if things go really well, February is still, you know, possible at least. Mm-hmm. That's for sure.
That's good
for
to hear.
For the rest of the world, I really don't want to burn my mouth because it was so much harder to launch this in Europe already than we originally thought, you know? Mm-hmm. And it's not for no reason that we're only launching in Europe and the UK. Mm-hmm. Because it, especially with North America, it's a whole different ballgame. Suddenly, you have to deal with publishers there, with different companies. It costs so much more to launch here. So the truth is, we're hoping to launch within the first year in, mm-hmm. in North and South America. That's and Japan and Australia. That would be ideal. Mm-hmm. But I can't promise anything. It's also very touching because we tried to make it very obvious that we are only launching in Europe and the UK. Mm-hmm. And we still had people buying perks from North America. And I always told them, okay, we're going to park your money. If it turns out this takes too long, at any point, people can just ask a refund. Nobody has eternally to wait for something that's not going to happen. And especially if it doesn't, if for some reason we should not launch somewhere else. Honestly, the truth is, if it's successful enough in Europe, mm-hmm. then we will launch in yeah. North and South America. And only if, for whatever reason, it would turn out not to be successful enough, then of course we can't do it. So that's how easy it is actually.
Yeah.
So it requires a successful launch in Europe. That's just what it is, you know?
Yes, and we are rooting for you.
Thank you.
Now, that's a really good segue to the user experience. If you are very blatantly going out for the people who are already paying for premium subscriptions of other platforms and who are also metalheads and wanting to get them to make the move to rock, I would be the first to do that. But I must admit that even though I have been wanting to move away from Spotify for a while now, I've been, one, very lazy, and second, I am used to specific experience, which means I'm used to having band biographies. I'm used to having lyrics for the songs that I listen to, or most of them. What about podcasts, for example?
Yeah, good question. So podcasts, of course, yeah, we want to have podcasts. Absolutely. We want to have your podcast. If you want to be on the app, absolutely. I would love that. No, we will have podcasts. It's just that, again, this is something we underestimated the work it would take to get all the labels on board. Mm-hmm. And podcasts was like, you know, number two behind
further
that.
Down in the priority list, of course. Yeah.
Because you need the music first, you know. Yes. That's going to be always number one on our app, at least. You know, I think, for example, with Spotify, I found it a little bit weird how they were pushing for the big podcast. Not weird, but like, to me, the music should be the priority. But then podcast is number two.
Yes, I was just listening to a marketing and economy podcast about that acquisition just yesterday. Yeah. And they were saying that, Spotify thought podcast is booming so much. This is a market we have to invest in. They bought a lot of media companies and they didn't get the return they hoped for. So now they have a problem.
It's the typical idea of people that you can buy anything, but you can't, you know. Yeah, there has to be some credibility and authenticity behind it.
Absolutely.
Things, you
know? Authenticity, I think, is very important. But you have announced on your website the Rockpedia. I'm thinking biographies will be there at least, and hopefully a little more facts. On the journalist side of me, my co-host or co-founder of the podcast, Pia, and I have been preaching for years that bands need to have better websites where we as journalists can find more information. So I'm hoping this Rockpedia will already help me out when I'm doing my research.
Yeah, so there's a lot to that. But first of all, for the bands, we want to make it easier for them to also edit their own stuff, because it's surprisingly hard on some of the other platforms. And so that's a win-win, because again, we don't have like endless manpower to do all that ourselves. But then it's also much better if they can directly change things, you know? Mm-hmm. So that's number one. And in terms of biographies, yes, that's where we want to be a lot better than the competition. Mm-hmm. And also in terms of background information, eventually the goal is that you can also sort things by production. Like, what's the producer of the album? What else did he produce? What was also recorded in the studio? What was also released in the same year? All these things. And all of this will be, and we're gathering all the information we can and connecting it. And this is at the core of what we want to do, to be better in this regard. Because, again, rock and metal fans, they are like that. They want to know about things. Yeah. And they want to, you know, see all the cross-references. Mm-hmm. Oh, who else did that person play? All these things. And so we will have that. And it's just that when you talk about the experience and everything, one thing we should not forget, as questionable as Spotify, for example, is ethically for me as a company, the product is pretty good.
Yeah.
And they have been around for 15, 16, 17 years now, and they're making billions. Maybe not in profit, that's for sure, but you know, there's a lot of money going around and they have a lot of people working for them.
Yes.
So it will take a while until we get to the same quality of the product. That's not to say that our product will not be good. It's just to have realistic expectations. We're doing our very best, but the big ones have an advantage over us,
for sure,
in this regard. But we will catch up as quickly as we can, you know?
Yeah.
But then even, honestly, even if people are not, like, even if people would not want to switch over to us, I would still hope that they would check out the competition. Because if it wasn't for our own app, I really like Tidal, for example. I should probably, it's not business smart to say things like that, but Tidal is a really, really good source. Mm-hmm. Tidal has its own problems, especially if you're a rock and metal fan. It doesn't really cater to you at all. And that's the one thing. Like, I'm still getting weird suggestions from them musically after months of using it. Mm-hmm. You know, because of course I'm using all of them now to see what's the experience and what are they good at.
Yeah.
But for example, Tidal's pretty good. You know, they're doing a lot of things really right, and we are trying to see what they are doing right and what Spotify is doing right, and then putting an ethical component on top of that.
Mm-hmm.
Aside from all the genre thing. And the genre thing, of course, because we are fans. That's
where
that's
your heart is.
Completely different. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Yes.
You know.
That was actually my consideration. When Spotify just a few months ago announced that they were increasing their prices, I was considering moving to Tidal. And then I learned about Rock and I thought, okay, maybe I will move right there as soon as it launches. But talking about what other platforms do well and also how you are trying to split the tasks between your people and the artists or their representatives, your bonus model, the way that listeners can support bands directly, it also sounds a little bit like an affiliate model. Bands giving out codes and links in order to onboard or bring on more listeners to the platform. And that way, giving directly the 10% bonus of their membership to this specific band that brought them over. Was that how you thought about it?
Yeah, I mean, technically, it is an affiliate system, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It just does, for some reason, especially with people that don't really know too much about it, like they are easily mistaking affiliate and a pyramid scheme. It's not a pyramid. That's like, that's the horrible thing, the pyramid scheme. An affiliate link is something that's been around a lot, especially on the internet.
Since blogs and the most, YouTube, yes.
Yes. And it's the most logical thing to do there. And again, it's none of this is perfect because there is no perfect way of doing this. But what's going to happen is if somebody comes to us through that link, we will recognize that in our system.
Mm-hmm.
And we will give 10% of the subscription for the first year of that person to that band that brought that fan. It's 5% for the second year. And then we're not able to look past that. We are trying to figure out, once we have actual user data, to make sure that a certain portion will always go to a charity.
Mm-hmm.
But we cannot quite figure out what. Like, this can be very little per user, but then hopefully add up to a lot over the whole platform. But for the direct artist support, if you go through a band with a regular subscription, 10% first year, 5% second year. Second year, you can choose a different band.
Mm-hmm.
So that band that brings you in has a guaranteed first year. And this was important for us because the band needs, we felt like they needed an actual reward.
Mm-hmm.
And what's even more important, we wanted to have something that kind of reflects a little bit what a record sale would be. So if you think about it, the 10% is roughly a euro,
mm-hmm.
like it's 80, 90 cents because it's after tax and tax is different than in all the European countries.
Mm-hmm.
Like not too different, but a little bit. Oh, right about a euro. But let's say for the sake of, you know, simplicity, it's 10 euros a year or so. 10 euros a year on top of what you get on royalties per fan.
Mm-hmm.
That's the same as if the fan bought a record at your merch, even actually a little bit better maybe.
Mm-hmm.
Or it's the same as selling three or four records through a label, like regularly, you know.
Okay.
So it adds that component back into the streaming game. That was the idea.
Yeah.
That you can actually also directly get the money from the people that actually really love your band.
Yeah.
That's that. And on the, we have that Hi-Fi Pro subscription, which is going to be lossless audio.
Mm-hmm.
And here's something interesting. Because we've had this debate for a long time. Like, my big thing was that I wanted to make sure that our regular subscription sounds really good.
Mm-hmm.
Better than Spotify. Because that's the one thing that we don't like about Spotify, the sound quality on the regular subscription.
Mm-hmm.
But for example, Tidal, Deezer, Apple Music, they all sound actually pretty, pretty good on the regular subscription. And I wanted to match that. But it also means, and this is, again, a tricky topic. Probably it's not business smart, but it is what it is. The truth is that for most people, the vast majority of people, the difference between that lossy audio on the regular subscription
mm-hmm.
and the lossless on the more expensive subscription is almost not, like, probably not be able to actually hear it.
Mm-hmm.
Especially if they're doing Bluetooth and if they're on not amazingly great headphones or if they're on not amazingly great speakers.
Yeah.
So I'm not saying that people cannot tell the difference. A lot of them will also be able to, but the difference is not insanely great because the original quality is already so good.
Mm-hmm.
So we're kind of shooting ourselves a little bit in the foot by making the regular subscription sound really, really good already. But for me, it was important because that's what people will be using mostly. The upside of the more expensive subscription is for me actually mostly the ethical stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Because by paying almost double, it also means that you are putting twice as much money into the system. And in our system, this actually will go to the artists of that particular genre and will be divided there or to the ones you're listening to.
Yeah.
And it also doubles that direct artist support. And with that 20, we are confident that we will be able to keep it at 10% indefinitely. So mm-hmm. it will not drop down in the second year, and it will not vanish in a third. It will stay at 10, because that's just enough with the margin that we can do this.
Yeah.
At least that's what it looks like now. It's super hard to predict these things. And what's sometimes a little bit sad for me is that sometimes when we're a little bit vague, like we say 2 to 3 times more, or like, you know, mm-hmm. people think we're doing this because we want to be tricky or anything. No, it's actually because we're trying to be very honest and very correct. It's also, we're still German after all.
Yeah.
And we're, that's how we do things.
Yes.
So this is not to be tricky or trick anybody later on. This is just because until we have user data, we don't have actual numbers. And until we have actual numbers, everything is just, you know,
predictions. Yeah.
Even if it's an educated guess, you know?
Yeah, I think that's very honest of you. I think from how you're explaining it, I have the feeling that you don't want to disappoint people afterwards in 3 years. And that is why you're being so careful with your wording and not because you are not being transparent.
Exactly that. But I also get that people are, and this, it's a sad reality of this world that people are apparently so used to being tricked or thinking they're being tricked that they are automatically assuming somebody wants to do that. But it's not always the case.
That is true. Now, going back to the affiliate model with the bands and artists, I have a few questions about that. And also just to clarify for the listeners, with an affiliate model, as Alex was saying, they have been around the internet for decades. What you would usually see, let's say, on a cooking blog, where you see the recipe also recommend a mixer. Then you have a link to Amazon and Amazon pays the blogger a percentage of that.
Yeah.
This time I, as a new user, would click on a band's link, and instead of Rock paying a one-time amount for onboarding me to the artist would get the 10% of my subscription for a whole year.
Yes, monthly, exactly. Uh-huh. Yeah.
Monthly, yes. Yeah. And you were also saying for the second year, the user would be able to change the band. And now that you explained it with the value of the album, which is also a pragmatic, very hands-on, easy to understand, I was thinking, and this was brought up on a YouTube video that I saw about your app. I'm going to link it in the description. It's from Tank the Tech. I've mentioned the YouTuber and Twitch streamer a few times on the podcast before. He did an analysis of your whole website, and one of his viewers even brought up the question of, what if I want to change my support bonus because all of a sudden we live in the age of the internet where people get canceled all the time. Cancel culture is a little problematic. We have learned better by now, I think, but sometimes can be still a fair thing. So what if I find out that the band I'm supporting with my 10% extra are not very good people and I want to change that bonus? Would that be still possible?
Yeah, that would be still possible within the first year. And actually, this is one of the great things about this whole campaign also, that we get this feedback from people, because we didn't think about this, to be honest. Sometimes you are so caught up in what you're doing and you're like, oh yeah, I didn't even think about this. But of course, this is totally a possibility. I know that there will be down the road some sort of problem there, where this is something that we will have to tackle once we get there.
Yeah.
The way I looked at it was, well, if somebody does something that's really not okay by our community standards, that violates them, and especially somebody commits a crime, you know, then obviously, as a platform, we would cut out that artist immediately off the system, and people would receive an email and would be able to redirect that artist support somewhere else.
Okay.
You know? But then, of course, I know it's inevitable that there will be a point where somebody will define something that, you know, violates community standards, while we might feel it's not the case, or vice versa.
Yeah.
But I think we just need to discuss then. We just have to have an open discussion and, you know, a culture where you can discuss these things openly. And ultimately, if somebody's really not comfortable with supporting somebody, then I don't see a point of enforcing them. We just wanted to avoid that people jump quickly. We wanted to make it worth for the artist and give them some sort of financial security.
Yeah,
that's the whole idea. But if somebody really is uncomfortable supporting somebody, then we don't need that person to be officially convicted. It just should not be for no reason. Like, it shouldn't be, oh, they don't like my soccer team, right?
Right.
Like, it should be something that's at least understandable.
Yeah.
But then we're not going to judge that. That's like, I don't want to force anybody to do anything there.
Yeah, and that is a very good point that you touched there as well, because we have seen so many metal bands in the headlines in the past year, especially, and some things are just to, you know, draw attention to themselves that they say something controversial and that's how they like their publicity. But other things like the, I'm not going to name them, but we all know the big German industrial metal band whose singer had allegations of sexual assault and sexual harassment. And even though the German police and the justice system dropped those claims and in the legal process and the investigation, I myself personally am still with the survivors and I will not give that band a platform at all. I know it would be really difficult for you to say, okay, we're not going to have their music at all in our catalog, because then we would have a lot of metalheads also not signing up for the app, which we also don't want. It's all really difficult. And I think it's also a very personal decision to separate the art from the artist or not, and how and who we support. But financial support is something really life-changing, world-changing. So I would encourage all of the listeners to actually be very mindful of whom we are supporting with our money.
Oh, absolutely. And especially in that case, I kind of hope that people will understand that it makes more sense to pick smaller and mid-sized artists for that. You know, once we have them, then a bigger band also in this case. Maybe, you know, I mean, for us as a platform, it would be amazing if Iron Maiden comes around and says, hey, sign up for that. But I mean, in that case, I would want to hope that we can have a talk with them and also see if some of that money can actually go to a charity or something.
Good point, yeah.
Because I mean, I get it. Everybody has to make money. I get that, but we will see about, but that's all like stuff we will see when we get there. But in that specific case that you mentioned, for example, so this is a really good example. I think as a platform, until somebody's convicted, it would be hard for us to exclude them from a program. But we could give the users exactly that choice to say, even if it's not officially convicted, just the allegations, the whole surroundings of it make me uncomfortable. I don't want to support that person anymore. I think this is something that we can do. But again, this is, there's so much more to it, because we will have contracts with these bands. And then they might actually sue us for like, you know, so like if we stop paying that. So there's always so much more involved. And as long as people understand that we will do everything and we will try to have an open discussion about everything, then that's fine. But it's actually a brilliant point, but I think we need to have that in the contracts that people will have that ability. It's good that we talked about this. It is more difficult than people believe, that's for sure.
Of course. It's a very complicated issue. And that is why I'm also glad that you have the German perspective of all the paperwork.
Yes, of course.
This is going to be. And talking about the artists on the platform, will you be vetting the ones? This one is another one of the great questions that came up on Tank's stream. Someone had the idea that nothing would be preventing, let's say, a Taylor Swift from registering on Rock and giving out her code to attract her fans and have her 10%. Will you be vetting the artist? We talked in the beginning of some sort of gatekeeping of the mainstream, of the pop mainstream.
The platform would just do it itself. That's the whole trick. Taylor Swift absolutely can encourage her fans to go and use Rock. But the moment a Taylor Swift fan goes on Rock and sees melodic death metal, trash metal of the 80s, I don't think that a vast majority of them is going to want to switch over. That's the whole idea. That's why the focus on the genre is so important. It's in the name already, you know? So it is a valid question, but I just don't see it happening, really. Honestly, that's the whole idea. It's not going to happen. The real question is, wouldn't it make sense to open this up without the genre limitation? But that brings us back again to the beginning. As long as it's pro rata and not user-centric, the only way of making it work is by being the gatekeeper and catering to the genre. That's number one. And because we are fans, we want to do this. That's number two. So I can't imagine that we, at some point in the future, if we are successful, we will make a genre-less version of it. But that could only work under user-centric models. Or, this is maybe getting a bit difficult, but or if we limited the number of streams people can actually have on their subscription. But this is going too far now. Like this, right now, my focus is just on what we're doing here. But that's the thing. Imagine you have like a typical rock, like a metal pop, right? and they're offering cocktails at a cheaper price than the bar next door. And like, it's like saying, aren't all these people then suddenly going to go into that metal pub? No, they're not. You know, they will go in there, stay for 10 seconds and you know, walk out backwards.
And go out running.
Yes.
And we are also using the word gatekeeping in a very jokingly manner. I wanted to state that as well, because you won't be making it difficult for anyone to sign up and listen to other genres, but you will be serving more towards the metalhead and asking more the metalheads to be the ones using the app.
Exactly. And that will produce that result naturally.
Yes.
You know?
Especially if the invitation comes from my favorite metal artist with this whole ethical context to it. It is a very enticing invitation.
It's a beautiful thing. You will see that.
It is really exciting too. Will there be any other perks for artists who are helping you bring people on board?
No. For reasons of fairness, we don't actually want to give them advantage in playlists or something. We were thinking about that too. But it should not touch the music again. Like, it's one thing, but the general platform should not be affected by it. Naturally, what's going to happen, if they are supporting us, we will share them on our socials. So it's going to support them in this way. But not in the choice of songs on the platform or something like that. We want to keep that super fair and not give people the chance to buy themselves in some way or another.
Right.
But of course, like, if they support us, we will share it, and that's going to support them in return.
Yeah, that was more of my thinking, less of an extra financial stuff, more of a mutual support kind of sticker, maybe some sort of rock ambassador, official rock ambassador thing, I don't know.
Yeah, that's for sure, of course.
That sounds great. Is there anything else you want to tell our listeners? Anything else you want to clarify that people have been misunderstanding out in the world?
Oh God, we had so many questions, fortunately, and so I feel like I talked about so many things. I would like to ask people to just give us a chance. And especially some people are very determined on particular systems. For example, they're asking us, is it going to work with this audio system, that audio system? Is it going to play in this car, that car? And I get that that's important to people. But I hope they understand that, again, we're a small team, so we are working these things top down. We have a list and we will fix one of these issues by another. So I would invite people to do a trial month. And if for some reason they are not satisfied, letting us know why they didn't like it. And then we can try and fix this. And hopefully they can come back and try another time. I just hope people will give us a chance and understand that we are competing with companies that have been in the game for 16, 17 years and have billions more to develop something than we have. So that's not to say that we're not trying to put out a great product, but some things might take a little bit longer in the first couple of months than they should, but we're doing our best.
Absolutely. And if we remember well, a decade ago when Spotify started, it was not perfect.
No, of course. Of course. Absolutely. And they also only launched, they didn't launch in the States. There was a lot of similar things, you know?
Right.
And their catalog built over time.
True.
That's it.
Yes. I'm super excited about this. I can't wait for the app to launch and to give that a try as well. And I would encourage everyone of you out there to also give Rock a try. We will obviously link everything in the description so that you can find the Indiegogo campaign.
Yes.
And all of the important links so that you can find Alex as well. Alex, thank you so very much for this talk that has been lovely. Thank you so much for your time.
You're welcome. Thank you, Kiki. It was really nice to have me. Thank you.
People out there, I will see you soon with more of our topics. Next month, we will have an episode about diversity in metal and how we can make the metal scene a little more accepting that we already think we are. What's your take on that, Alex, if I may ask you that last quick thing? My statement is that the metal community is said to be the most welcoming. I think we can do better still.
Oh, yeah, of course. That's the case with everything, right? I also agree we are probably the most welcoming and we are doing much better than other scenes, other subcultures and genres. But of course it can always improve. But I think everything is going in a great direction. You know, my girlfriend is a singer, she has a band, and it's nice to see that the whole gender thing is becoming less and less of an issue. And because it used to be just singers mostly, and now you have it's a perfectly normal thing to have all female bands, to have mixed bands, to have females playing instruments, and nobody bats an eye. And that's how it should be. That's number one.
True.
But it doesn't stop there. Of course, it goes to everything else across the whole spectrum of all things, considering diversity. But I think we are doing good. And yes, you can always do better, of course.
Yeah. Ooh, can you plug your partner's band? We are big on supporting the women in metal here, so.
That is wonderful. Kira's band is called Sündenrausch. German name, Sündenrausch, right?
Of course. Mm-hmm. I think we have talked to her before then. That's awesome.
She's upstairs juggling the two boys now, I guess.
Oh. You know?
So I should go back and help her with that.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for your time. Send our love to your family from the Bleeding Metal Podcast, formerly known as Metal in High Heels. And everybody out there, subscribe now to the Bleeding Metal Podcast on iTunes or Spotify or wherever you're listening right now. Thank you so much, Alex.
You're welcome. Thank you. All right. Talk to you soon. Bye-bye.
Bye.